Hello, Sun Sounds listeners. This is Andy Bombeck, which means once again, it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I promise you this time, we're going to finish the book that I've been reading now for like 10 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. And I'm going to begin a brand new novel today. Okay, but first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled In the Wild. And then it's Good Morning, I Love You, Violet. Nico Draws a Feeling. And I'm going to read some The Wallace and Ladmo Show Presents Aunt Maud's Storybook. And these are some fables. And we'll also have time to read some poems by Shel Silverstein from his book titled Everything on It. So it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today titled In the Wild. Okay, here's the very beginning with pictures. Dad likes camping, explaining things. Dislikes searching for missing cats. Mom likes music, talking to neighbors, dislikes mess. Dora, the cat, likes fancy things, dislikes ordinary things. Bob, the dog, likes screens, sleeping, dislikes people ignoring the schedule. Maud, the girl, likes Kit, who's a hamster, judo, and being a bit weird, dislikes vets being teased. Derek, who is the parrot, likes staying indoors and eating, dislikes being alone. And Kit, who is the hamster, likes pets, adventures, dislikes not being allowed more pets. Kit, the hamster, was going away. But where is she going? Derek, the cat, wanted to know. Derek never went away. He liked the indoors. Even if someone left the window open, he wasn't tempted. I've never slept in a forest, said Kit. She was a bit nervous. She remembered that time Dora stayed out all weekend. Everyone had been so worried. But eventually, Dora turned up in Mrs. McKenzie's wardrobe. Well, the school has sent a kit list, explained Mom. There's nothing to worry about. You'll be in the great outdoors. But there's nothing great about the outdoors, cried Bob. It's dark, the dog. It's full of wild animals. There's no TV. Even if Bob had a Bob list, he wouldn't sleep in a forest. Maud, the girl, was worried. Who would Kit talk to if she couldn't get to sleep? Who would she hug if she got lonely? Will I be in a tent or in a room? Asked Kit. A tent, said Mom. But tents are really very nice these days, and there's going to be a bonfire. Rather you than me, pal, said Derek. And what about the schedule? Bob wanted to know. On Tuesdays, they did judo. On Wednesdays, they had a proper rest. On Thursdays, they practiced their signature moves. It'll all be over before you know it, said Dad. Maud remembered this was just what he'd said when the vet gave her that injection. Kit got started on the kit list. There was a lot of stuff to bring, but you had to put a label on each thing with your name written on it. Bob was more worried about the things you couldn't bring. Bob the dog, no phones, no tablets, no laptops. That was Bob's idea of a nightmare. Maud checked the kit list. Well, it didn't say no Mauds. There they are. They just arrived at the park. Everyone's setting up their tents, getting ready. Suddenly, Maud heard a rustling, and out of the bush rolled a strange round thing with a face in the middle. Hello, said Maud. Defense, shouted the thing, and it's a porcupine. What are you doing? Asked Maud. Defending myself, said the thing. Everyone in the forest has a defense, said the thing. This is the hedgehog. It's called that because I am one. Have you got a defense strategy? I have a signature mood, said Maud. Bend, twist, touch your toes. It's called the Maud. Well, it's a bit odd, said the hedgehog, and it could be spikier. Oh, I am a bit of an oddball, said Maud proudly, but I am also a Maud. Instead of spikes, I have judo. Well, it's the spikes that make us hedgehogs the kings of the forest, said the hedgehog. I mean, after the badgers and the foxes and maybe the owls, we're definitely in the top four. Well, the hedgehog was called Harvey, and he knew everything about living in a forest. He knew that rain brings the worms out. He knew all the secret places squirrels hide their acorns. He knew that soon it would be dark, and they were going to need somewhere to camp for the night. This, said Harvey, is my natural habitat. Watch and learn. But the most important thing, Harvey explained, is to always be alert. Oh, no, and an eagle just picked up Maud the hamster. Maud was worried. Maybe she was going to go into the clouds or up into forever overhead. But she remembered her signature move. Bend, twist, touch your toes. And then she falls into the arms of Harvey. You could always stay, you know, said Harvey. I've loads more to teach you. Mud chucking, stick breaking, worm slurping. Maud liked Harvey, but she had a schedule to get back to, not to mention Kit and the other animals. Well, then, the most important thing, Harvey explained, is to make it seem like you were never here. So they're all cleaning up the campsite. Once everything was tidied up, it was time to go home. But there were no maps in the great outdoors and no phones. How could you find your way? You had to follow your nose. And also the signs. The sign says parking lot. This is my natural habitat, said Maud. Watch and learn. All right, now they're climbing into somebody's backpack as the kids are boarding a bus. Back at home, Kit built a tent in her bedroom so all the animals could try it. And she brought popcorn from the snack cabinet. But what do you do at night without TV? Bob wanted to know. You tell stories, explained Maud. And what do you lie on? Wondered Dora. Mostly leaves, said Maud. Some twigs. What about snacks? Asked Derek. There was no snack cabinet in the great outdoors. Well, you just have to know all the secret places the squirrels hide their acorns, said Maud. But the most important thing is to always stay alert. And now Maud's getting picked up by the mom. Oh, it's my only Kit's mom, said Derek. Kit's mom did not look happy. Worrying about mess was Kit's mom's signature move. Oh, and they look inside the tent in the living room, and there's popcorn all over the place. But there was no need to panic. Kit and Maud had learned a lot in the great outdoors. "See," said Kit, "it's like we were never here." Good morning. I love you, Violet. On Monday, Violet didn't want to get up. She pulled the covers over her head. "Good morning, Violet," her mom called from the kitchen. But it didn't seem like a good morning at all. The air outside Violet's blankets felt chilly, and it was still dark. At breakfast, her cereal was wet and soggy. At school, Violet forgot the answer to number 6 on her quiz. "I can never remember things," she thought. At lunch, Violet spilled juice on her sweater. "I'm so clumsy," she cried. At recess, she missed blocking a goal at soccer. "I'm just not good at sports," she told herself. Violet's class had a very special visitor that afternoon. Dr. Friedman was a scientist. And she wrote on the board, "Good morning, I love you." "Sometimes we talk unkindly to ourselves," she told them, "and that hurts our happiness. I'm going to teach you a practice of planting seeds of kindness," she said. "It seems simple, but it's powerful and can change the way you feel. Every day when you wake up, put your hand on your heart, take a breath, and say to yourself, 'Good morning, I love you.'" "Planting seeds of kindness sounds nice," said Lila. "My dad told me about that," said Xavier, looking up from his book. "What you practice grows stronger." "That's right," said Dr. Friedman. "By planting seeds of kindness, you can grow happiness." "I'll try it," said Jackson. Violet wasn't sure. It sounded silly to her. How would saying she loved herself change anything? On Tuesday, Violet woke up and remembered she was supposed to tell herself, "Good morning, I love you." "I don't think so," Violet muttered. That morning at recess, Violet's friends gathered around. "Did you try it?" Jackson asked. "Did you say, 'Good morning, I love you?'" "I did," Lila smiled shyly. "It was kind of nice. Planting seeds of kindness." "I did too," Jackson said. "What you practice grows stronger," Xavier said. Violet looked away. On Wednesday morning, Violet heard her mom call from the kitchen. "Good morning, Violet. I made waffles." Violet thought about telling herself, "Good morning, I love you," but it felt awkward. "I'm not saying it," she said. In the kitchen, Mom gave Violet a big hug. "Waffles mean I love you," Mom said. "I love you, Violet." That was a nice way to start the day, Violet thought, with love. At school, Jackson said, "It's weird, but I really like telling myself, 'Good morning, I love you.'" "It makes me feel warm and happy inside," said Lila. "What you practice grows stronger," said Xavier. "Did you try it yet, Violet?" Jackson asked. Violet gritted her teeth. "How would it help?" she asked. "Well, you're planting seeds of kindness," Lila said. "It's easy," Jackson said. Violet remembered how good it felt when her mom told her she loved her, and she trusted her friends. "Okay," she said, "I'll try." On Thursday morning, Violet's blanket felt cozy. Her mom said, "Good morning, I love you, Violet." Violet remembered promising her friends that she would try planting seeds of kindness. "I can do this," she said to herself. She put her hand on her heart, took a deep breath, and said, "Good morning, I love you, Violet." Violet waited for something to happen. She felt a tiny bit of warmth in her heart. Was that what her friends were talking about? On Friday morning, Violet woke up looking forward to school. Friday was her favorite day of the week. Before she got out of bed, Violet put her hand on her heart, took a breath, and said, Good morning. I love you, Violet. This time she felt warmth in her heart for sure. In art class, Violet spilled her watercolors. Don't worry, Violet told her teacher. I'm good at cleaning up messes. In language arts, she missed 3 words on her spelling test. I'll study harder next time, she told herself. At recess, Jackson made 2 soccer goals and Violet didn't make any. Good job, Jackson, Violet told him. I like having you on our team, Jackson said. Soon, it was time to pack her backpack and go home. Have a good weekend, Lila called. See you on Monday, Jackson said. Later, Xavier said, remember to practice planting seeds of kindness. Violet's friends called after her. I will, Violet promised. On Saturday morning, Violet slept until the sun woke her. Everyone in Violet's house was sleeping in too. Violet smiled at the warmth of the sun. Then she put her hand on her heart and whispered, good morning. I love you, Violet. Nico draws a picture. Nico loved to make pictures. Everywhere he went, he carried a box of colored pencils and a pad of paper. Because everywhere he looked, he saw something that inspired him. It might be a mother bird building her nest, or the ice cream truck ring-a-linging down the street, or the low hum, or the low autumn sun peeking out from behind a cloud. When Nico was inspired, it felt like a window opening in his brain. An idea would flit through the open window like a butterfly, flutter down to his stomach, then along his arms and fingers to his pencils, where it would escape onto his paper in a whirlwind of color. It was a wonderful feeling, and Nico tried to capture it as often as he could. Sometimes he showed his pictures to his friends. What is it? One of them would ask. It's the ring-a-ling of the ice cream truck, Nico would answer. It doesn't look like the ice cream truck, someone else would say. It's not the ice cream truck, Nico would explain. It's the ring-a-ling. Where's the bell? It's not the bell, it's the ring-a-ling. I don't get it. Sometimes he showed his picture to his parents. What is it? His mom would ask. It's the warm of the sun on my face, Nico would answer. Well, I don't see the sun, his dad would say. It's not the sun, it's the warm. Where's your face? Well, it's not my face, it's the warm. Oh. Once he showed a picture to his teacher, Miss Reed. What is it? Miss Reed asked. Well, it's the hard work of a mother robin building her nest, Nico answered. Where's the robin? It's not a robin, it's her hard work. So this is the nest? It's not the nest, it's her hard work. I see. But Miss Reed didn't see. None of them did. One night, Nico sat on his bed, thinking about all the pictures taped to his walls. Then he looked at himself in the mirror. He was inspired to make another picture, only this one he taped to the back of his door, where no one else could see it. The next day, Nico was heading out with his paper and colored pencils when he noticed a moving truck next door and a girl about his age. Hi, said the girl. I'm Iris. I'm Nico. Hi. What are you doing with that stuff? Oh, this? Nothing. Are you going to draw? Well, yeah, I like to make pictures. Can I see them? I don't know, he said. You might not like them. But I might, Iris answered. Nico decided it would be rude to say no, so he invited Iris over. When they got to his room, Nico waited for her questions. But she just looked and looked. Finally, after looking at every picture in the room, Iris discovered the one behind the door. Wow, said Iris. What, said Nico. You must have been sad when you made this picture. How did you know? Iris thought, well, it looks like how I feel, you know, sad because I had to move. Suddenly, Nico felt a window opening in his brain. Can I make a picture for you? Asked Nico. For me? Sure, said Iris. Like a butterfly, an idea flitted through the open window, fluttered down to his stomach, then along his arm and fingers to his colored pencils, where it escaped onto his paper in a whirlwind of color. When he was finished, he handed the picture to Iris. This time, Nico asked the question, "What is it?" Iris looked at the picture for a long time without saying a word. At last, she looked up at Nico. "Well, I'm not sure exactly, but it makes me feel like I made a new friend." Nico stared at Iris. "You can see that?" "I can feel it," Iris replied, "like a butterfly landing on my finger." "A butterfly?" asked Nico. "I know. It sounds weird." Nico smiled. "Not to me." Okay, now I'm going to read some short stories from the Wallace and Ladmo Show Presents Aunt Maud's Storybook. And this one's titled The Picnic. Once upon a time, it was a slow day in the forest, so all the animals got together and decided to have a picnic. "I'll bring the lemonade," said Charles the Chipmunk. "I'll bring the cookies," said Bruce the Bear. "And we'll bring ourselves," cried the ants, because you can't have a picnic without ants. Just then, Morris the Moose spoke up. "What about the sandwiches? Who's going to bring the sandwiches?" Everyone looked around. Finally, Dennis the Duck said, "Okay, I'll bring the sandwiches." There was a polite ripple of applesauce. And then Elmo the Elk said, "Let's all meet back here in an hour for the picnic." So Dennis the Duck went home to make the sandwiches. It was a big responsibility because everyone knows sandwiches are the most important part of a picnic. Pretty soon, Dennis the Duck had finished making 3 dozen really tasty-looking sandwiches. On the way back to the picnic, he got hungry, so he stopped to have one of the sandwiches. And another one. And another one. In fact, by the time Dennis the Duck arrived at the picnic, he had eaten all the sandwiches. The rest of the animals were really upset, but the delicious roast duck helped everyone forget, and the picnic was a success after all. The First State Fair. Now, we all know that the opening of the State Fair is a very special day, but this is the story about the very first State Fair back in 1878. Electricity had just been invented, and everyone was waiting for the fair to open so they could see all the new rides. There was a Ferris wheel and a merry-go-round. All the children were looking forward to the fair. It was going to be great fun. But an hour before the fair opened, there was a power failure. Without electricity, the rides couldn't operate. While everybody was waiting for the power to be turned on, it started to rain. Everyone was soaked, but they still waited. They waited and waited. Even in the cold night air, they waited. Finally, when everyone had just about given up hope, the finance company came and repossessed the rides. They took away the Ferris wheel and the merry-go-round. All the children went home crying. No state fair. And late that night, when everyone was asleep, the power came back on. But, of course, by then, it was too late. A North Pole Office Party. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and Santa was getting ready to deliver all the toys and presents to all the boys and girls. Santa's helpers had worked very hard making all the toys in Santa's workshop. Their job was finished, and they were celebrating by having a little office party. Santa stopped by to have just one eggnog, then another, and another. Sometime after midnight, someone suggested to Santa that he better get started. There was an argument about that, and a fight broke out. The police arrived and booked everyone on a drunk and disorderly charge. Santa was out on bail the next morning, but, of course, by then, it was too late for Christmas. The Fish and the Three Wishes. Once upon a time, the king was fishing in the moat outside his castle. After a while, he caught a fish. The fish said, "If you throw me back in the water, I'll give you three wishes." The king said, "Okay," and tossed him back in the water. The fish came to the surface and said, "What's the first wish?" The king said, "I want a big pot." No sooner said than done. A big pot appeared. "For the second wish, I want a big fire," said the king. Poof! A big fire started under the pot. "And for the third wish," said the king, "I want all the water in the moat to dry up." The water dried up, and the king walked down to the bottom of the moat and picked up the fish and tossed him in the pot and cooked him. But surprise, it turned out there was a fourth wish. It belonged to the fish. So the king got food poisoning and died. Okay, here's the last one. The animals tried democracy. Once upon a time, all the animals were upset because the lion was the king of the jungle. "How come he always gets to be king of the jungle?" asked Horace the hippo. "I don't know," answered Charles the chimp. "Let's ask Edward the elephant." But he didn't know either. "I've got an idea," said Roger the rhino. "Let's have an election and pick our own king." Everyone agreed. There were speeches, demonstrations, and a good time was had by all. Finally, it was time to vote. The giraffes voted and the zebras voted. Everyone voted. Who won the election? Chester the chicken won. That's who. As Chester stepped forward to make his acceptance speech, the lion jumped out of the bushes and ate him. The lion was once again king of the jungle. It ruined everyone's day, especially Chester's. But remember, even if your candidate doesn't win, your vote is important. Okay, I'm going to finish up the first half hour with a few Shel Silverstein poems from his book, Everything on It. Betty's Spaghetti. Betty, Betty, sneezed in the spaghetti, made it icky and gooey and wetty. So throw it out, it's ruined and lost, unless you like pasta with sneezely sauce. Dirty Face. Where did you get such a dirty face, my darling dirty face child? I got it from crawling along in the dirt and biting two buttons off Jenny's shirt. I got it from chewing the roots of a rose and digging for clams in the yard with my nose. I got it from peeking into a dark cave and painting myself like a Navajo brave. I got it from playing with coal in the bin and signing my name in cement with my chin. I got it from rolling around on the rug and giving the horrible dog a big hug. I got it from finding a lost silver mine and eating sweet blackberries right off the vine. I got it from ice cream and wrestling and tears, and from having more fun than you've had in years. Grumbling. Some people's stomachs gurgle and growl. some people's stomachs rumble and howl. My stomach just begins to shout, no more ice cream and sauerkraut. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to finish the book that I've been reading now for about 10 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. And then I'm going to begin a brand new novel. Darcy believes in love at first sight. She spent her whole life waiting for that perfect magical moment. But right now, her life is anything but perfect. After a music festival, she's stranded at a bus station until morning, the day before she leaves for college. Her phone is dead, she has no cash, and she's convinced nothing good can come of this night. But then she meets Russell. Russell, cute and nice, funny and kind. This is the moment and the guy she's been waiting for. And they have until sunrise to walk and talk and connect. Over the course of this one fateful night, filled with football field picnics, night swimming, and escape artist dogs, Darcy and Russell's lives will change forever. They'll discover things they never imagined about each other and about themselves. But can you really know someone after only a handful of hours? Is it possible to fall in love in just one day? And is it worth saying hello when you know you're destined for a goodbye? Okay, last week, the last time they talked at the airport, they decided to meet in December at Jesse, Nevada, the Jesse, Nevada bus station where they'd first met. But as it got closer to December, Russell wasn't sure about driving to Jesse and suggested meeting in L.A. instead. But eventually, Russell agreed to meet in Jesse. So that's where I left off last week. Russell finally agreed, and November continued apace. My dad flew out for Thanksgiving. He stayed in a hotel, but we had Thanksgiving dinner at Jillian and Anthony's. It was something that I wouldn't have believed could even be possible a few months ago. But there we all were, sitting around a table, passing the gravy, and arguing over whether marshmallows belonged in sweet potatoes. I was a resounding yes. And before the month was over, I got another equally ground-shaking surprise. Russell sent me a link to a song, the Darcy and Russell song, with Wiley singing it. It was a little pre-holiday present just for me. There weren't any plans to release it, and it was just for the three of us, which made it all the more special. And ever since he'd sent it, I'd been listening to it pretty much nonstop. So it felt like things were working out as I'd flown home to California 3 days earlier. Well, despite the small wrinkle that Rami Anarkhani was going to be my roommate come January. She emailed to tell me that she was like so over California and had applied to transfer to Stanwix from UC Santa Cruz. And when she'd mentioned she knew me and the housing office saw the vacancy that they weren't thrilled about to begin with, it must have been a done deal. So I was preparing myself to lose my single room and have to share it with one of the most chaotic people I knew. And while Katie and Dee Dee were horrified, I also figured that if Rami and I could survive sharing a tent together at a music festival, we would probably be okay in a dorm room. I checked the time, then my teeth in the rearview mirror. In a few minutes, just a handful of seconds, I would be seeing Russell again. We hadn't made any plans beyond this. I honestly didn't know what was going to happen. I'd promised my dad I'd be back home on the 23rd, but that was the closest I'd come to planning. Maybe we'd stay at the Silver Standard, or drive to Wiley's house, or get a room somewhere in Vegas. But it was okay that we didn't have a plan. I was going to see him again soon, for the first time in months, and that was all that mattered. And I knew we'd figure everything else out from there. I'd changed into a nicer outfit at the rest stop on 93 North. I was no longer in the cutoffs and t-shirts from my drive. Not only because they'd gotten slightly sweaty and ketchup-stained, but they were really not going to work with the sweater, with the weather. It was in the high 40s, with the temperature dropping, so I was now wearing my favorite short blue knit dress with a gray cardigan over it. I gave myself one last look in the mirror, then got out of the car. The bus station, I was surprised to see, was different than I remembered. It seemed smaller somehow. The flickering light in the vending machine had been fixed. But most of all, there were now other people in it. There were people working behind the ticket windows and sitting on the benches killing time and waiting in line for the bathroom. The Sunday night quiet that we'd found when we'd washed up here was gone, replaced by the bustle of pre-Christmas travel. Russell wasn't anywhere in the bus station, but that was okay. I knew he'd be here soon. I walked over to the spot where I'd camped out, the one under the "When You're Here, You're Home" mirror. For just a second, I flashed back to the girl I'd been back in August, trying to pretend I didn't care about Jillian, dreading the future, scared to go up and ask strangers for a phone charger. And I realized, with a kind of wonder, just how much can change in a few months. Even though I was in the same place, it seemed like a million years ago. I felt a tap on my shoulder and turned around, and there he was, Russell, my Russell. He was wearing a light blue button-down dark jeans sneakers, and his hair was a little longer. He was so handsome. He made it hard to breathe for a second. "Hi," he said, his eyes steady on mine. "I heard you were looking for me." I smiled, simultaneously wanting to laugh and to cry. But instead, I just nodded. "I sure am." I practically threw myself at him as he swept me into his arms and gave me a kiss that let me know he had been missing me these last few months just as much as I'd been missing him. We broke apart, and I hugged him tightly, realizing that the mirror, of all things, was right. I was home. I was with him. "Hey," I whispered into his ear, "fun fact." Russell drew back slightly to look at me, one eyebrow raised, expectant. I took a deep breath and made myself say it. "I think I'm in love with you." Russell was smiling at me with his eyes, his lips, with his entire face. "Wow, that is a fun fact," he said, "because I know I'm in love with you." And we kissed again, a little less frenzied because I knew we had time. We had all night and the next few days and then whatever came after that. Maybe Russell would get into NYU and would be just a train ride apart. Maybe he'd go to USC or Temple or Michigan, and we'd continue to figure it out. Maybe this was all going to fall apart next week. Maybe it never would. The only way to find out, I'd finally realized, was to jump in. "So," Russell said, when we stepped away. He took my hand in his and raised it to his lips. "What comes next?" I smiled at him. "Whatever we want. We get to write our own story." He grinned. "Can I pick the genre?" I laughed at that as he swung our hands between us, and we started walking across the bus station toward the doors. I knew that our love story, the story of Darcy and Russell, wasn't anything like the love stories I'd seen in the movies. It was better. It was ours. Russell squeezed my hand in his and then held open the door for me. And we walked out into the December twilight together. And that concludes the Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Okay, the title of the new novel is Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging. Angus is a cat. Snogging means kissing. I am a facsimile of a sham, of a fax of a person. Georgia Nicholson's life is far from simple. Her cat, Angus, is the size of a small Labrador. Her three-year-old sister may have peed somewhere in her room. And her best friend, Jazz, thinks she looks like an alien just because she accidentally shaved off her eyebrows. Enter the sex god. This just might turn out to be the most fabbity fab year ever. And this is a note from the author, a note from Georgia. Hello, American-type chums. Perhaps you say howdy in America, I don't know. But then, I'm not really sure where Tidbit is either, or my lipstick. I'm writing this special message to you from my bedroom in England. Here is my nub and thrust. Apparently, American people are not English. This means you might not always understand what I say, what I am going on about in the book. Well, join the club, I say. How do you think I feel? I am me, and I don't know what I'm going on about half the time. However, for your benefit, I put a glossary at the back of the book that will explain-ish things. Things like nutty pants and tosser. I hope you like my diary, and don't hold it against me that my great-great-great-grandparents colonized you. Not just the two of them, obviously. August. La Marche of Mystery. Sunday, August 23rd. My bedroom, raining, 10 a.m. Dad and Uncle Eddie round, so naturally they had to come and see what I was up to. If Uncle Eddie, who is bald as a coot, says to me one more time, "Should bald heads be buttered?" I may kill myself. He doesn't seem to realize that I no longer wear romper suits. I feel like yelling at him, "I am 14 years old, Uncle Eddie. I am bursting with womanhood. I wear a bra. Okay, it's a bit on the loose side and does ride up around my neck if I run for the bus. But the womanly potential is there, you bald coot." Talking abreast, I'm worried that I may end up like the rest of the women in my family, with just the one bust. Like a sort of shelf affair. Mom can balance things on hers when her hands are full, at parties and so on. She can have a sandwich and drink and save a snack for later by putting it on her shelf. It's very unattractive. I would like a proper amount of breastiness, but not go too far with it, like Melanie Andrews, for instance. I got the most awful shock in the showers after hockey last term. Her bra looks like two shopping bags. I suspect she is a bit unbalanced hormonally. She certainly is when she tries to run for the ball. I thought she'd run right through the fence with the momentum of her bosomers, as Jazz so amazingly calls them. Still in my room, still raining, still Sunday, 11:30 a.m. I don't see why I can't have a lock on my bedroom door. Every time I suggest anything around this place, people start shaking their heads and tutting. It's like living in a house full of chickens dressed in frocks and trousers, or a house full of those nodding dogs, or a house full of Anyway, I can have a lock on my door is the short and short of it. Why not? I ask Mom reasonably, catching her in one of the rare minutes when she's not at Italian evening class or at another party. Because you might have an accident and we couldn't get in, she said. An accident like what? I persisted. Well, you might faint, she said. Then Dad joined in. You might set fire to your bed and be overcome with fumes. What is the matter with people? I know why they don't want me to have a lock on my door. It's because it would be a first sign of my path to adulthood. And they can't bear the idea of that because it would mean they might have to get on with their own lives and leave me alone. Still Sunday, 11:35 a.m. There are six things very wrong with my life. Number one, I have one of those under-the-skin spots that will never come to a head but lurk in a red way for the next 2 years. Number two, it is on my nose. Number three, I have a three-year-old sister who may have peed somewhere in my room. Number four, in 14 days, the summer holes will be over, and then it will be back to Stalag 14 and Oberdorf Frau Simpson and her bunch of sadistic teachers. Number five, I am very ugly and need to go into an ugly home. Number six, I went to a party dressed as a stuffed olive. 11:40 a.m. Okay, that's it. I'm turning over a new leaf. I found an article in Mum's Cosmo about how to be happy if you are very unhappy, which I am. The article is called Emotional Confidence. What you have to do is recall, experience, and heal. So you think of a painful incident and you remember all the ghastly details of it. This is the recall bit. Then you experience the emotions and acknowledge them, and then you just let it go. 2 o'clock p.m. Uncle Eddie has gone, thank the Lord. He actually asked me if I'd like to ride in the sidecar on his motorbike. Are all adults from planet Zinyan? What should I have said? Yes, certainly, Uncle Eddie. I would like to go in your pre-war sidecar. And with a bit of luck, all of my friends will see me with some mad, bald bloke. And that will be the end of my life. Thank you. 4 o'clock p.m. Jazz came around. She said it took her ages to get out of her cat suit after the fancy dress party. I wasn't very interested, but I asked her why out of politeness. She said, well, the boy behind the counter in the fancy dress shop was really good looking. Yes, so? Well, so I lied about my size. I got a size 10 cat suit instead of 12. She showed me the marks around her neck and waist. They were quite deep. I said, your head looks a bit swollen up. No, that's just Sunday. I told her about the Cosmo article, and so we spent a few hours recalling the fancy dress party, i.e. the painful incident, and experiencing the emotions in order to heal them. I blame Jazz entirely. It may have been my idea to go as a stuffed olive, but she didn't stop me like a pal should do. In fact, she encouraged me. We made the stuffed olive costume out of chicken wire and green crepe paper. That was for the olive bit. It had a little shoulder straps to keep it up, and I wore a green t-shirt and green tights underneath. It was the stuffed bit that Jazz helped with mostly. As I recall, it was she who suggested I use crazy color to dye my hair and head and face and neck red, like a sort of pimento. It was, I have to say, quite funny at the time. Well, when we were in my room. The difficulty came when I tried to get out of my room. I had to go down the stairs sideways. When I did get to the door, I had to go back and change my tights because my cat, Angus, had one of his Call of the Wild episodes. He really is completely bonkers. We got him when we went on holiday to Loch Lomond. On the last day, I found him wandering around the garden of the guest house we were staying in. Terry Awee. While it was called. That should give you some idea of what the holiday was like. I should have guessed all was not entirely well in the cat department when I picked him up and he began salvaging my cardigan. But he was such a lovely-looking kitten, all tabby and long-haired with huge yellow eyes. Even as a kitten, he looked like a small dog. I begged and pleaded to take him home. "He'll die here. He has no mummy or daddy," I said plaintively. My dad said, "Well, he's probably eaten them." Honestly, he can't be callous. I worked on Mom, and in the end, I brought him home. The Scottish landlady did say she thought he was probably mixed breed, half domestic tabby and half Scottish wildcat. I remember thinking, oh, that'll be exotic. I didn't realize that he would grow to the size of a small Labrador, only mad. I used to drag him around on a lead. But, as I explained to Mrs. Next Door, he ate it. Anyway, sometimes he hears the call of the Scottish Highlands. So, as I was passing by as a stuffed olive, he leaped out from his concealed hiding place behind the curtains, or his lair, as I suppose he imagined it in his cat brain, and attacked my tights, or prey. I couldn't break his hold by banging his head because he was darting from side to side. In the end, I managed to reach the outdoor broom by the door and beat him off with it. Then I couldn't get in Dad's Volvo. Dad said, "Why don't you take off the olive bit and we'll stick it in the boot?" "Honestly, what is the point?" I said. "Dad, if you think I am sitting next to you in a green t-shirt and tights, you're mad." He got all shirty, like parents do, as soon as you point out how stupid and useless they are. "Well, you'll have to walk then. I'll drive along really slowly with Jazz, and you walk alongside." I couldn't believe it. "If I have to walk, why don't Jazz and I both walk there and forget about the car?" He got that tight-lipped look that dads get when they think they are being reasonable. "Because I want to be sure of where you are going. I don't want you out wandering the streets at night." "Unbelievable," I said. "What should I be doing walking the streets at night as a stuffed olive? Gate-crashing cocktail parties?" Jazz smirked, but Dad got all outraged parenty. "Don't you speak to me like that, otherwise you won't go out at all." "What is the point?" When we did eventually get to the party, me walking next to Dad's Volvo, driving at 5 miles an hour, I had a horrible time. Everyone laughed at first, but then more or less ignored me. In a mood of defiant stuffed oliveness, I did have a dance by myself, but things kept crashing to the floor around me. The host asked me if I would sit down. I had to go at that, but it was useless. In the end, I was at the gate for about an hour before Dad arrived, and I did stick the olive bit in the boot. We didn't speak on the way home. Jazz, on the other hand, had a great time. She said she was surrounded by Tarzans and Robin Hoods and James Bonds. Boys have a very vivid imaginations. Not. I was feeling a bit moody as we did the recall bit. I said bitterly, well, I could have been surrounded by boys if I hadn't been dressed as an olive. Jazz said, Georgia, you thought it was funny, and I thought it was funny, but you have to remember that boys don't think girls are for funniness. She looked annoyingly wise and mature. What the hell did she know about boys? God, she had an annoying fringe. Shut up, fringy. I said, oh yeah, so that's what they want, is it, boys? They want simpering girly-whirly in cat suits? Through my bedroom window, I could see next door's poodle leaping up and down at our fence, yapping. It would be trying to scare off our cat, Angus. Fat chance. Jazz was going on and on wisely. Yes, they do. I think they do like girls who are a bit soft and not so, well, you know. She was zipping up her rucksack. I looked at her. Not so what? I asked. She said, I have to go. We have an early supper. As she left my room, I knew I should shut up. But you know when you should shut up because you really should just shut up. But you keep on and on anyway. Well, I had that. Go on. Not so what, I insisted. She mumbled something as she went down the stairs. I yelled at her as she went through the door. Not so like me, you mean, don't you? And this is where I'm going to have to stop today because you are out of time. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with the novel Angus, Thongs, and Full Frontal Snogging. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.